Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyau from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Government has been shut down for nearly a month with no end in sight. What does this have to do with healthcare? What happens next? There may be a deal. There may be a vote soon. Margarita from Healthcare for America Now is here to talk about it. Welcome to Care Talk Live, where we talk about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate, here to help you. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and our experts will answer them in future episodes. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get next week's Care Talk show. In today's episode, we're talking about the government shutdown and what that means for your healthcare. So welcome, Margarita, the Executive Director of Healthcare for America Now.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So let's start with the rumors and the actual votes that happened this weekend. We've been shut down for a month. What's going on?
Yeah, actually more than a month, 41 days. So it's not a record to be proud of, but here we are. So there were last week some indications that some Democratic senators were starting to get very nervous about the duration of the shutdown, especially because there was really no end in sight. And we are now at the point in the shutdown where a lot more average people are being impacted. And just to make clear, at the heart of the shutdown, the reason that this shutdown happened was because when the Republicans passed their signature law this year, the big one that they passed in July, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, they omitted in that law the extension of premium tax credits for coverage on ACA exchanges. Now, those premium tax credits are really important because they help the vast majority of people who get their health care through the exchanges afford that care. It basically brings the cost of health care for a family or for an individual down to 8.5% or less of their income. Without the premium tax credits, many fewer people would be able to afford coverage. And of the people that can afford coverage, they would be paying a lot more. So that has been a critical issue all year. The premium tax credits expire in December. Republicans have repeatedly refused to extend the premium tax credits. As we came up on this deadline to fund government, Democrats essentially insisted and said in the deal to fund government, the short-term deal to fund the basics of government that keeps government functioning as normal, Republicans also need to include provisions to extend the premium tax credits. So this is not creating something new. It's an extension of something that already exists, just like the Republicans extended tax breaks for corporations and wealthy families in their big law. This would extend the premium tax credits. 92% of people who buy this coverage need those tax credits. And when Republicans refused to come to the table with a deal that included that extension, the Democrats refused to vote for their bill. And then the government shutdown ensued. And essentially, Democrats made a commitment and said, until President Trump and the Republican majorities in Congress are willing to negotiate over extending these premium tax credits, we are not going to support a bill for government funding, because this is, you know, 22 million people's healthcare that we're talking about, and something has to be done. So that's sort of a little bit of framing of the dilemma that we're in. Now, what happened over the weekend is now that the government The government's been shut down for 41 days, and you see lots of people experiencing loss of SNAP benefits, their food stamp benefits, Head Start benefits, the problems with the airlines, all these different things. Increasingly, with every passing day, more and more people are directly impacted by the government shutdown. A set of 8 senators on the Democratic side started to negotiate, and they wanted to negotiate a more bipartisan deal with the Republicans in Congress for a 2-step plan. So rather than a bill that, as Schumer, as Democratic leader Schumer, proposed a bill that would include an extension of premium tax credits, they were willing to talk about a deal that, one, open government, and then, two, got a commitment from Republicans to have a vote on extending the premium tax credits sometime before the end of December. That's not ideal. You know, to be honest, in a situation like this, you want to get as much as you can up front. But from the perspective of these Democrats that were negotiating with Republicans, they didn't think that even after 41 days, President Trump, Republicans in Congress hadn't moved on the premium tax credit situation. So they wanted to go ahead and push for something. They had that vote yesterday, the procedural vote to move it forward. So now that has to go to the full Senate. And it has to pass the Senate with 60 votes. And then once it passes the Senate, remember, it's still got to go over to the House, and the House has got to pass it. And that's a pretty tough lift, because Speaker Johnson, who leads the House, his chamber has not even been in session for 50 days, right? The House of Representatives have been out for 50 days. And two, Speaker Johnson has been saying all along that he can't guarantee that he can get Republicans in Congress on board with a deal that extends the premium tax credit. So he's really going to need President Trump to help him with that. And it's so far unclear that President Trump will intervene. So once things get over to the House, there's a fair level of uncertainty about what's going to happen. So, you know, the nutshell is we've made a little bit of progress. We can sort of see the end of a government shutdown on the horizon, but there are still some hurdles to overcome before we can feel really confident that the government shutdown is going to end. And more importantly, really confident that something substantive is going to get done on the premium tax credits, so that people actually know how much their health insurance is going to cost them over the next year.
Okay, so just in order, the Senate needs to vote again, and then if the Senate passes it, it needs to go to the House, and the House needs to vote, and then Trump needs to sign it. So there's several places where this could fall through, and we would be stuck in a shutdown.
Yes, and keep in mind also that this government funding bill only goes to January 30th, so it's possible that Democrats could do all the things, negotiate, pass the bill, get the government reopened, and get into a situation where the Republicans don't follow through on their promise. This would not be the first time. Don't follow through on their promise to have a vote on extending the premium tax credits. And then when we get to January 30th, we're back in a shutdown. Because Democrats, I have to say, seem very, very, very determined that something has to be done about the premium tax credits. This is millions upon millions of people. And keep in mind, it's not just millions upon millions of people that get ACA coverage, because the insurers are using this as an excuse to also raise rates on employer-sponsored coverage. That's half the country. And we have other changes to healthcare made under the Trump administration that are going to just throw healthcare into chaos. All of this ACA tax credit stuff is on top of what they just did to Medicaid in the OBBA. So anyway, I think it's, you know, there's a huge amount of uncertainty. And, you know, I think people who care about healthcare, which is like just about everybody in America, regardless of who you voted for, wants more affordable healthcare. You cannot have too much contact with your member of Congress or your senator. And that does not, it doesn't matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. They really need to hear from people that the priority of average Americans is this affordability issue in healthcare, and they need to take action to extend the premium tax credits at a minimum. That's the minimum that they have to do, because we all know that there's quite a lot more to do to actually build a healthcare system that works much better for people.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you pointed out is really important, in that the repercussions cover everybody in our healthcare system. Yes. So whether or not you have insurance through the Affordable Care Act, the cuts to Affordable Care Act means people will drop their insurance, means that insurance companies raise their rates for everybody else. So everyone, regardless of where you get your insurance, just about everyone is facing huge premium hikes for next year.
Right. And we know, and, you know, people who worked on, people who remember, you know, 15, 16 years ago when we passed the Affordable Care Act, the number one thing that really brought Americans across the board, and I'm talking corporations, small business, farmers, herders, ranchers, young people, middle-aged families, everybody came to the table. And the key thing that brought everybody to the table was that there was a massive number of uninsured people. And it was well understood back in the day that when you have big numbers of uninsured people, we all end up paying more for coverage, right? Because those people are going to get healthcare one way or the other. And if the insurance companies are not paying for it because we don't have legislation, or government is not playing its watchdog role to make sure that they're managing costs and that, you know, people have coverage, then all of that cost just gets shifted to consumers. So at the time that we passed the Affordable Care Act, we had 47 million uninsured people. That amount of people has been reduced by over half because of the Affordable Care Act. But under these policies, whether it's expiration of the premium tax credits, whether it's what the Conservative Party has done to Medicaid, whether it's rolling back consumer protections, all of these things will contribute to growing numbers of uninsured people. And growing numbers of uninsured people really hurt everyone. It drives up costs for everyone. And we get back into a situation where the cost of healthcare becomes prohibitive. It's a burden on business. It's a burden on families. It's a burden on small business people.
Mm-hmm. And so just to repeat for everyone watching and listening right now, if you are paying too much for your health insurance for next year, what can or should you be doing right now?
Well, if I were you guys, I would be looking up the Congressional Switchboard number, and I would be contacting my members of Congress, and I would be saying the same thing to every single one of them, which is, do your job, come back to the table, reopen the government, and negotiate a deal that extends the premium tax credits and lowers healthcare costs for millions of people in America. You should do it for those people, and you should do it because it broadly benefits everybody in America. And one other thing, if you are in a Republican state, and sometimes, Laura, I bet you get this too, sometimes I have people say to me, well, I'm in a Republican state and my member of Congress like isn't going to care because he's a Republican. Let me assure you, your member of Congress will care. And the reason why is because the vast majority of people that gained coverage under the Affordable Care Act because of these enhanced premium tax credits have been in the South. Those are the states where enrollment in the Affordable Care Act has really, really, really increased. So in Alabama, where 300,000 people got coverage under the Affordable Care Act, over half of them will lose their coverage because of lack of action on these premium tax credits. So if you're in Florida, you're in Texas, you're in Alabama, you're in Mississippi, whatever, you're in a state where it's like, you know, these Republicans who are running the state really don't have, you know, I haven't before seen them pay attention. There's an election coming up. Just trust me when I say they're going to be paying attention. And on a thing like affordable health care, if they are hearing from their constituents, they're going to be responsive. So we have a lot of opportunity to influence the outcome here. And I personally think one of the reasons why the Republicans are being so stubborn about the premium tax credits is they are not hearing from enough of their constituents. And so as many people as can, and it doesn't even have to be a political thing, you can have a conversation that's very much just what Laura said. When you talk to your friends, your family, your coworkers, your neighbors, hey, do you think the cost of healthcare is too much? If yes, could you make this call? Because a lot of people's costs are going up. There's only five big insurers in America. Please believe it. If United Healthcare, if Aetna, if all the others raise costs for people on the ACA exchanges, it is just a matter of time before they're going to raise your insurance working for XYZ big company where your employer is paying a larger share and then is forced to pass on some of that cost to you.
Absolutely. And already some people with employer insurance are saying, you know, they're facing big increases for next year.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for this. And like you said, regardless of who your elected officials are, you should contact them. Interestingly, Marjorie Taylor Greene has come out saying we need to do something about health insurance. Mm-hmm. So wherever they are politically, they are listening to their constituents and they need to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Just keep in mind, every politician gets elected and says essentially the same thing. We're going to lower your costs. We're going to make your life easier. It's going to be so much better. You can't wait. Okay, well, like costs are not being lowered. So, you know, we're well within, it's our job. This is our job, right? People who care about democracy, this is how democracy works. Members of Congress will respond when they hear from their constituents an urgent demand to do the thing that we need them to do. So really important. We still have time to influence the outcome. And even after the government is reopened, we still have time. Because remember, the actual vote on a healthcare deal is maybe not going to come until early December. So we still have plenty of time to be jamming up members of Congress and saying, this is what we want. I personally think not only should they extend the premium tax credits, members of Congress should get serious about doing something to control prices, right? I mean, mm-hmm. either party can do that. Neither one does a very good job. But it's not just a matter of Band-Aids to help people afford costs. Why are they not doing more to regulate insurance companies to stop them from raising their premiums as high as they want whenever they want? That's what we're really trying to get to.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Now
we're going to have our experts answer your health insurance questions. So welcome to Louise Norris, Health Insurance and Healthcare Reform Analyst at healthinsurance.org, and Rachel Madley, Director of Policy and Advocacy at Center for Health and Democracy. So let's start with Louise, because open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act has begun. So as people are shopping for the health insurance plans for next year and they're comparing plans on the marketplace or their employer plans or whatever, can you explain what deductible, co-insurance after deductible, and maximum out-of-pocket means? Because people may be seeing multiple different plans with those numbers and trying to figure out what does that actually mean.
Absolutely. So your deductible is for certain services. This is the amount of money you have to pay before your health plan starts to pay. Plans differ in terms of what services they count towards the deductible. Some plans count everything other than preventive care towards your deductible, meaning you have to pay for those services yourself until you've met your deductible. The deductible will be the amount that you're actually paying. You're not actually paying the full cost that the doctor or hospital bills, because your insurance company is going to reduce that based on whatever network negotiation they have with that medical provider. But you are paying the full amount of your deductible before your health plan starts to pay. So some plans have no deductible. Some plans have a deductible of a few hundred dollars. Some plans have a deductible all the way up to $10,600. That is the maximum that any plan can have in 2026, whether it's an employer-sponsored plan or an individual market plan. As long as it's an ACA-compliant plan, that's your upper limit, because that is also the upper limit on maximum out-of-pocket costs. So maximum out-of-pocket is just like it sounds. It's the maximum amount that you will pay out of pocket during the course of the year for services that are covered by your health plan. And you also do have to stay in network to get that upper limit. It's as high as $10,600, but it could be much lower. So you might be seeing a plan that has a $5,000 or $6,000 maximum out of pocket limit. Whatever that is, that's your worst case scenario. That maximum out-of-pocket limit is, you can reach it by a combination of your deductible or copays. If your plan has copays, maybe for office visits or urgent care visits or going to the pharmacy, all of those count towards your maximum out of pocket as well. And then a lot of plans, most plans, have coinsurance as well. And the way coinsurance works is after you've met that deductible, then your plan starts paying a percentage of your costs and you pay a percentage. It's very common to see an 80-20 split where you pay 20%, the plan pays 80%, sometimes 70-30, sometimes 50-50. And you will continue paying that percentage of your costs until you hit that maximum out of pocket. So when you're looking at plans, sometimes you will see, for example, if you see a plan that has a $100 deductible and you think, well, that's great, that's easy, I can meet that. You want to look a little deeper and see, like, does the plan have, say, a $500 per day copay for being admitted to the hospital? You want to look at all the details, and you really want to pay attention to that maximum out of pocket number, because again, assuming you stay in network and assuming the care is covered by your plan, that's your worst case scenario when you're planning ahead. And so for folks who are looking in the marketplace right now, as Margarita was explaining, this government shutdown, the crux of this was whether or not to extend basically enhancements that have been in effect for the marketplace subsidies since 2021. And right now, as of right now, we do not have a deal on that. Congress is going to vote in December. We don't know what the outcome of that is going to be. So if you go on healthcare.gov or your state-run marketplace right now and you're looking at the plans, you are going to see basically what you're seeing is the prices without those subsidy enhancements being in place. You're seeing the worst case scenario on prices. The actual plan details themselves, as far as deductibles, copays, coinsurance, none of that will change. That's all locked in for 2026. But what might still change is the after subsidy premium that you'll pay. Depending on what Congress does next month, that could change. If they do nothing and let these subsidy enhancements expire, then the subsidies are going to go back to the way they were in 2020 and previous years, which means if you make more than 400% of the poverty level, you will get no subsidy whatsoever. So just to put that in perspective, for a single person in the continental United States, it's a little under $63,000 a year. For a household of two, it's a little under $85,000. For a household of four, it's a little under $129,000. So if you're putting in an income above those amounts and you're seeing no subsidy, that's why, is because unless Congress extends those subsidy enhancements, subsidies end altogether at 400% of the poverty level. And if you're below those numbers on income, you will still see a subsidy because the basic ACA subsidies will still be in place, but it won't cover as much of your premium as it would have if those subsidy enhancements were to get extended. So that's what's still up in the air at this point, is how much you'll actually pay in after subsidy premiums next year. We don't yet know. One important point for folks to understand is that starting in 2026, all bronze plans in the marketplace are HSA eligible. So if you are a little bit above that 400% of the poverty level number and you're seeing no subsidies whatsoever, if you enroll in a bronze plan through the marketplace and then commit to making a contribution to an HSA, you can contribute up to $4,400 for a single person and up to $8,750 if you have more than one person on your plan. Though that reduces your income and might possibly be a way to get you a marketplace subsidy. So these are just the things to keep in mind when you're looking at these plans, as far as like what is locked in. What's locked in is the actual plan details. What's not locked in is how much you're going to pay in premiums. But what you're seeing right now on the marketplace websites is your worst case scenario for premiums. It's possible it could get better. It's also possible it might not get better.
Thanks, Louise. And people have until when to sign up for their plan for next year?
So in most states, you have until at least January 15th. Idaho is different. Their open enrollment period actually ends altogether on December 15th. In most states, you do need to sign up by December 15th if you want your coverage to take effect January 1st. So other than Idaho, you do have until January 15th, or in some states even later, to sign up. But if you're signing up after December 15th, in most states, it's not going to take effect till February. So, you know, it's people, you do still have some time, but it's important to set yourself a calendar reminder to make sure that you don't miss that, in most states, December 15th deadline if you want coverage January 1. Unfortunately, we might not know because this vote on what's going to happen with these subsidy enhancements could be coming like right around that time. So there is still a lot that's up in the air and that might still be up in the air at that point. People just need to keep paying attention if they're shopping for marketplace coverage.
Mm-hmm. And keep watching Care Talk because we'll talk about it.
Keep watching Care Talk. And I will continue updating on healthinsurance.org, you know, as all these things are unfolding for sure.
Thank you, Louise. And now to Rachel. We've talked about this before, but how concerned should people be about the use of prior authorization in traditional Medicare next year? It's an announced pilot program that will be affecting some people.
That's a great question. And at the moment, there is little reason for people with traditional Medicare to be concerned that they will see a huge increase in prior authorization requirements next year. That's because the program that you mentioned is just a pilot program being tested in a few states like Arizona, Washington, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Ohio, and Texas. So if you're on traditional Medicare, you do not need to be overly concerned about next year. And actually, the prior authorization requirements in private Medicare Advantage plans are still going to be much higher than in traditional Medicare. So in Medicare Advantage, plans can often require prior authorization for hundreds of different medical procedures and services. I've even seen plans that require it for over 1,000 different procedures. The thing that I think we should all be monitoring and be worried about is the increasing use of prior authorization, mainly in private plans, whether it's Medicare Advantage plans or commercial insurance plans, because these delay and deny needed medical care. So we should keep a close eye on the expansion of prior authorization in traditional Medicare and continue to raise the alarm about the use of prior authorization in private plans and fight for a decrease in the use of that prior authorization so that we make sure that people are getting the medical care that their doctors prescribe and the care that they need to be healthy.
Thanks, Rachel. Let's talk about open enrollment and Medicare, since that is going on right now. What is it? Who needs to take action? What do they need to do? And when does it end?
That is a great question. So right now is open enrollment for Medicare. That means that you can enroll in a private Medicare Advantage plan or in traditional Medicare or switch between the two. What you should know is Medicare Advantage plans are run by insurance companies such as United or Aetna. And you want to keep in mind that unlike traditional Medicare, which does not have a set network, you can see any doctor that accepts Medicare. Medicare Advantage plans have networks, and research has shown that it's often much narrower networks than traditional Medicare, than the providers they can see. And also, as I mentioned, Medicare Advantage plans often require prior authorization for a lot of medical care, whereas traditional Medicare does not. So when you are looking at these plans and the decision between traditional Medicare and Medicare Advantage, keep that in mind. You should also know that when you enroll in traditional Medicare, you can also enroll in a Medicare Part D plan, which is a prescription drug coverage plan. And additionally, you can enroll in a Medicare supplemental insurance plan, which is known as a Medigap plan. That will help you cover out-of-pocket costs like co-pays or co-insurance that you may have in traditional Medicare. Open enrollment is going on, as you mentioned, and you have until the end of the year to make those decisions.
Great. Yeah, I think Medicare open enrollment in the period ends December 7th, so people have a little bit of time, but make your choices now and do the research to figure out what the best plan is for you. And I know some people on Medicare Advantage have already gotten notices that their plan's being canceled and so on, and so they will need to make a choice. Do you have any advice for those folks?
Yes. So folks who have gotten their Medicare Advantage plans canceled may be eligible to switch to traditional Medicare and get a Medigap policy. Typically, when you're switching from Medicare Advantage into traditional Medicare, Medigap insurance companies can deny you for pre-existing conditions. However, if your Medicare Advantage plan is not available anymore, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services sometimes open a special enrollment period for you to be able to get that Medigap plan without them being able to deny you for those pre-existing conditions. If you are unable to make that switch, you may have to choose another Medicare Advantage plan if the out-of-pocket costs of traditional Medicare are too high for you. And so if you are having to switch to a different Medicare Advantage plan, look at the provider network and make sure that your current doctors are still in network with your new plan. And also look at their prescription drug information and make sure, and sometimes you'll have to call the health insurance companies to ask these questions, but make sure that any medications that you are taking, especially injectable medications, which can be more expensive, are still covered by that new Medicare Advantage plan. And something just to keep in mind is that in order for folks to really have that choice they need between Medicare Advantage and traditional Medicare, we really need to establish a cap on out-of-pocket expenses in traditional Medicare, which I know is something that Diane has spoken a lot about here on Care Talk. And I always want to throw that into the conversation because I think it's really important for us to be working towards that goal of capping those out-of-pocket expenses, but making sure that people are informed about their Medicare decisions while we work towards that larger policy goal.
Exactly. Affordable Care Act plans have a maximum out of pocket and Medicare should as well.
Exactly.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Rachel and Louise. And thank you to everybody watching. Here to learn more about the government shutdown and how our healthcare system works or doesn't work in general. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions to 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us next week for more on healthcare in America and perhaps an update on the government shutdown. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk.
It's Sunday morning, and that wonderfully relaxed feeling of a long, lazy day lingers in the air. If you want to make the moment last, may I suggest the perfect solution? The Martin Sheen Podcast. Join me, your host, Martin Sheen, for beautifully crafted 20-minute programs filled with never-before-heard stories of my life, along with personal reflections and poetry that inspires. The Martin Sheen Podcast is the perfect Sunday refresh, a chance to take a deep breath, relax, and know that the stress of Monday may be just around the corner, but not here, not now. So make this your weekly moment of calm as we explore faith, hope, love, and what it means to be human. And know this, this journey is ever unfolding as I invite you to see what's next with me, Martin Sheen, and thank you.